Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
China cuts mortgage rates in a historic move. Tesla rolls out a revamped, longer-range version of its Model 3 vehicle. Plus, student loan borrowers brace for restarting payments. And a battle is brewing over an American dining out tradition, tipping.
A lot of customers are kind of at a breaking point. They feel like going out to a restaurant is a lot more expensive, and they're not really excited about paying more.
It's Friday, September 1st. I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Chinese banks have cut deposit rates this morning after China's central bank announced long-awaited stimulus to the nation's struggling property market. WSJ reporter Rebecca Fung says the 10 to 25 basis point cut comes ahead of a major change to how mortgage rates are set in China.
The central bank, for the first time, allowed Chinese commercial banks to renegotiate and reduce the existing mortgage rates. So unlike in the U.S., where people can refinance their mortgages. In China, homeowners cannot refinance their mortgages, but the mortgage rate has declined quite a lot over the years, which means that many of the homeowners, they would like to refinance and reduce their mortgage rates. The other measure that is also quite important is that the central bank said that cities can lower their minimum down payment ratio for first and second time home buyers. All of these measures are sort of aimed at addressing this massive slump in the Chinese property market at the moment, which led to weaker economic growth.
Chinese property stocks rallied following the news, although Hong Kong's stock market was closed today as the city hunkered down ahead of the expected arrival of powerful Typhoon Saola. Schools canceled classes, many businesses were shut, and a number of flights were either delayed or canceled. Another market-moving event today is the U.S. jobs report, which is expected to show a slowing pace of employment growth despite historically low joblessness. While economists caution that labor actions in August, including Hollywood strikes, may distort these figures, Journal reporter Gwynne Guilford tells us that fewer jobs takes pressure off the Fed.
Economists expect that the U.S. economy added about 170,000 jobs in August. Now, that puts us back to levels last seen in 2018, 2019, basically when we had a regular old strong job market and not a super crazy, white-hot, insanely tight job market that apparently follows a global pandemic. This is important for the Fed because the slowing pace of employment growth takes pressure off the Fed to raise rates. And that, in turn, is important for achieving that soft landing, because if inflation can come down without the Fed having to damage the economy by raising rates further, then bingo, we have a better chance of not having a super damaging recession.
Today is also the day where millions of Americans are reminded that their student loan payments are resuming in October. After a three-year pause and the Supreme Court's rejection of President Biden's debt cancellation plan, interest on these loans will now begin accruing as of September 1st. WSJ reporter Julia Carpenter says that means people with student debt need to prepare, update their bank info, and settle on a new payment plan.
It's a really big day for student loan borrowers because for the first time after 3 years of uncertainty, legal challenges, a failed forgiveness plan, and more, this is the day that interest again picks up on student loans. In October, borrowers will have to begin making payments. But for now, they're going to see that interest again start to take its toll on their loans. So this is the time to refresh who owns the loan, how much you owe, when you owe it, revisit your payment history, and think about how you're going to reabsorb this loan into your budget.
Coming up, an American restaurant capital is the biggest battlefield yet in a fight related to tipping. More on that after the break.
Thank you. Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/IT heroes.
Around the country, battle lines have been drawn over a very American tradition, tipping at restaurants, specifically over whether waitstaff and other tipped workers should also receive minimum wage instead of being paid at sub-minimum levels. Now this debate has reached its biggest stage yet, Chicago, one of America's culinary capitals. Joining us to discuss the showdown is WSJ reporter Heather Haddon. Hi, Heather.
Hey, thanks so much.
So, Heather, can you tell us what is exactly behind this fight? Not just in Chicago, but in D.C., I know, and in other places. And how has each side been faring in the battle up to this point?
Yeah, so there's a campaign that's kind of evolved over recent years. The lead nonprofit behind it is called One Fair Wage, and they've actually gotten some celebrity backings from chefs and some other individuals who basically say that paying waitstaff a lower wage and then having their tips make up the difference between what an actual minimum wage would be isn't fair. So their argument is that this is an outdated tradition. It can just leave servers at the whims of their customers. And sometimes they think those customers might not like their service, or they might see not tipping as much for someone who's of a different race or gender or ability for some reason.
And so is there anything specific about Chicago and how the battle reached that city? Is there anything there in particular that's stoking the debate?
Yeah, well, they found an ally in the new mayor. So Brandon Johnson, who ran for office here on a very progressive slate, they got to him while he was campaigning earlier this year and had him promise that this would be one of his priorities. And he's continued to say that he supports making this change. And the city council introduced a bill over the summer that starts this process to try to repeal this sub-minimum wage class and institute a minimum wage for workers. But this group does not say it's limited at Chicago at all. I mean, they're looking at ballot measures all over the country next year and in coming years.
And so the folks in Chicago, the people who are supporting the expansion of minimum wage to the restaurant workers, are there any specific bullet point reasoning that they're offering behind their campaign? And also the actual employees of the restaurants who'd be directly affected by this change, are they fully on board with it?
It's a very divided issue. So the employers I talked to who have eliminated it just on their own, the sub-minimum wage, they say that their staff, it's really helped in terms of loyalty. It's made for less turnover. It's kind of keeping a more consistent labor pool, which is really important because restaurant labor has been very difficult to get since 2021, basically. Some employees who support it say there's downtime. There's times where maybe the restaurant isn't as full, and this can give them, guarantee them a certain set wage and a certain amount of stability. Now, not all servers say that. I did talk to servers who maybe are very experienced ones who say, I like earning tips. That's how I've made my way through this industry for a long time, and I earn really good money through tips, and I don't want the threat of that being taken away from me. There's some concerns that if it's moved to a straight gratuity, will they actually get that money? And then the restaurants do not support this, think it's going to vastly contribute to their expenses. They say that currently customers are subsidizing some of these wages at a time where they've had a huge expense increases in labor and food and all kinds of things because of inflation, and this is going to really hurt them.
Have there been any specific types of resistance that are being seen coming from the owners and the operators of the restaurants?
Yeah, so talk to the Illinois Restaurant Association and the National Restaurant Association, which are trade groups here, and they are definitely against this. They think, again, that this is going to really hurt restaurants at a time where they don't have a lot of free cash to start paying their employees a lot more. I talked to one restaurant group that said costs for their front of house labor would go up something like 60%. And there's concerns that they'd have to reduce hours for servers or reduce their labor pool because they just can't afford this expense. This is also a time where a lot of restaurants have increased their prices, their menu prices a lot, and they don't think that customers are necessarily going to pay a lot more to help fund this increase in wages for labor.
Yeah, and that actually points up something that I wanted to bring up. It was the customer side of all this. Is if this ordinance goes through, what kind of effect would it have on them?
Some restaurants might raise their menu prices more. There might be a little fewer servers working at any one given time. But others might find that they have a 20% gratuity attached to their bill. So there's no tip, but it's just expected that they're paying 20% or whatever the restaurant chooses to administer on their bill, just as a fact. So there's no real wiggle room in what the customer pays in terms of a gratuity.
That was Heather Haddon, our reporter in Chicago. Thanks a lot for your time, Heather.
Thanks so much.
The U.S. is imposing sanctions on a Russian company for allegedly supporting North Korea's development of weapons of mass destruction. The move comes in response to Pyongyang's failed attempt to launch a reconnaissance satellite into orbit last week. The Treasury Department says the sanctions are part of a coordinated effort with South Korea and Japan, on the heels of President Biden's Camp David summit with leaders from the two U.S. allies. The Russian company Intellect couldn't be reached for comment. Tesla has unveiled its anticipated revamped longer-range Model 3, which went on sale today in China. But the announcement has come as a surprise to analysts who had been expecting a lower price tag. Here's WSA reporter Raphael Huang.
So the last time when Tesla introduced a new passenger vehicle was in early 2020. And for Model 3, today's new version is the only revamp since the car was launched 6 years ago. So investors have long hoped that this new model could spur new demand for Tesla. And in China, an EV older than 2.5 years is already considered aged. So this new model could probably help Tesla defend its position in its biggest overseas markets where competition is so fierce, especially with local players like BYD.
And that fierce competition came to the fore today, with Tesla once again lowering prices for its Model X and Model S EVs sold in China. Meanwhile, the United Auto Workers Union is accusing General Motors and Jeep maker Stellantis of not bargaining in good faith 2 weeks before labor contracts are set to expire. UAW President Sean Fain said the union has filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, citing unfair labor practices by the two automakers. GM and Stellantis both denied the allegations, saying they were surprised by the charges. There is, however, a sigh of relief for the U.S. supply chain after the union representing dock workers at West Coast ports said members have ratified a new 6-year contract. This ends over a year of uncertainty for importers and exporters, which had triggered some shifts in supply chains away from America's biggest ports. A union spokesman declined to disclose the contract's terms. And with Labor Day weekend upon us, many have already packed their bags and set out for some late summer sun. But some of you heading to the airport today may be dreading long lines and the infamous delay in security when the water bottle at the bottom of your bag has set off the scanner alarm. The good news is that the stress of pulling everything from your computer to your kid's juice box out of your carry-on may soon be a thing of the past. WSJ travel reporter Allison Poley says U.S. transportation regulators are implementing new 3D scanners at airports that are making security stronger and faster.
The TSA says that they are implementing them pretty much as soon as they're ready and installing them at airports, but they are very expensive machines. It's going to take many years for them to be fully installed. But the main goal of them is that they're supposed to be more secure than the old machines. So because they provide this 3D image that the TSA officer can rotate, they can see completely inside of the bag without needing to pull it aside and dig through the bag. So they're able to do that on the screen as opposed to pulling the passenger aside and rifling through all of their things.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. Today's show is produced by Mohsin Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Have a great weekend and thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.